Great. So we're going to look at Revelation 7. And what the sort of pattern seems to be with all these talks is I feel a sense of one particular kind of point being drawn out each time, sort of, which brings a bit of a pattern and a flow over all of them. And this week it's about vision and how that informs and clarifies everything in our life. A little quote from Proverbs, the beginning of a quote from Proverbs, which I'll unpack later, is the title, "Without a vision we perish." So, quick recap, Revelation is about a revealing. And it reveals a number of things, primarily who Jesus is. So far we've only really met his humanity in the Gospels. And this is an encounter more with his divinity, his sovereignty, his lordship over nations, in some ways his magnificence, in ways that the Gospels maybe touched upon but couldn't fully express. The unseen realm, the seen and the unseen, the spirit realm, the end of this age, and of who we are as believers, who we are seen through spiritual eyes. We just looked at chapter 6, and between chapter 6 and 8, and then later on, between chapter 8 and 11, and later on in chapter 16, there are the depictions of human suffering. They're all sevenfold pictures. We're in the middle at the moment of the seals, and then there are trumpets, and then there are seven bowls. There are, in fact, 52 sevens in Revelation, seven being the Jewish symbol of completeness or perfection or wholeness. And there are interludes, there are breaks between the sixth and seventh seals in each occasion. And this chapter 7 we're looking at today is an interlude. And we've just read again what happened in chapter 6. These incredible, intense, painful depictions of human suffering, which for as civilised as we are 2,000 years on, we still find that a quarter of the world is suffering under sword, famine and plague. And that's still an ongoing and current issue, even though we have technology, we have enough food, we have enough of everything we need for that not to be an issue. We see that this is still current, and we may not personally experience it, but we will know that we have brothers and sisters and fellow humans who are experiencing terrible suffering through this. So the context is a crying out, particularly of brothers and sisters who are being persecuted. There were more martyrs in the 20th century than all the other centuries put together. There are obviously more people in the world as well, but the spread of Christianity is exploding, and along with that persecution. There's a crying out, and we used last week this idea of labour pains, this increased intensity and momentum giving birth eventually to a new heaven and a new earth. So chapter 7, and we see a bit of it in chapter 6, and we looked at it last week, has two aspects to it. It has a promise of protection, and we see a number of ways where God's timing, he seals people, or he doesn't do anything until the appropriate time. He puts hedges of protection around. And we looked into that last week. The notes are there in the talks online. So this week I'm going to press in on the second thing, I think, that chapter 7 draws out, which is this glorious vision of the end. So looking at chapter 6, we looked at the protection God brings, even through the most distressing circumstances. And this week, focusing on the glorious vision of the end. The insight of the end is inspiring enough to empower believers to persevere in their faith, even in the most distressing circumstances. And we know this, and I'm going to give a number of very human examples how this works. One of the seven habits in Steve Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Successful People is begin with the end in mind. So whether it's a building project, we're in one, or whether it's Michelangelo chipping away David, he saw David, he didn't see the marble. Whatever it is, it's the vision of where we're going that sustains us through the process of getting there. I believe this is off, this operates out of a biblical principle, which is we are inspired more by a revelation or a vision or a now word from God or intimacy, what your intimacy with God produces to enable us to get to where we need to be, the vision of where we're going, than our reactions that are out of lies, often from our own woundings. And I was interested in Carla's testimony earlier. She talked about she knows who she is, someone who fights on behalf of those who have injustice and bringing justice. And that enables her to overcome any obstacles. So we don't succeed very well if we're trying to resist the negative. But if we've got a revelation of the positive, of who we are, or what the end is, or what the painting is we're doing, or the building work, or the business we've started, whatever the thing is, if we know what that is enough to sustain us. And as people of God, when we hear his voice for what we're building, it's enough to sustain us through the process of building. So here, that I've sort of unpacked a bit more this lovely proverb. Without a vision, without that prophetic revelation, the people perish. But blessed, happy, full of favour and abundant life is he who fulfils the law, i.e. God's revealed word. There's something that happens when we hear God for who we are. Maybe it's for the day, the week, the month, the year, or for a relationship, that his design for a relationship, or his design for a piece of money or material goods, or just what his design is for something, is so empowering to bring life to us when we come into agreement with that. And it sounds superficial, some of the examples I'm using, but I do think this spreads across the board. And Jesus himself, I talk about his most incredible and intense suffering here. We have this really touching insight from the writer to the Hebrews, who reveals that Jesus persevered because he had a vision of what lay beyond the cross. He had a vision of what his resurrection would achieve. And this is a beautiful verse in Hebrews 12. We fix our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, because for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of God. The joy, we'll come to it more in a minute, but the joy was being with us. The joy was us. We were the vision that enabled him to endure the cross, scorn its shame, and be raised from the dead, and raised, seated with God in authority. And we'll come more to his vision for us in a minute. Because Jesus fulfills that proverb perfectly. He had a vision, therefore he didn't perish. He was blessed and happy because he perfectly fulfilled God's law, and in him we can fulfill that proverb too. He also uses this analogy himself to refer to his own sufferings just before the end. It says, a woman giving birth to a child has pain because her time has come, but when her baby is born, she forgets her anguish because of her joy that a child is born into the world. And we can see example after example in life. An athlete like Mo Farah may imagine his gold medal when he's getting up at 6 a.m. in the morning and everyone else is still in bed and running and running and running and sprint training and muscle training and eating very precise foods and every single act of self-denial or rigorous training, there's that gold medal in mind, and that's the thing that gets him through. Or a farmer, his harvest, again getting up at 4 a.m. ploughing the ground, weeding it, churning it over, getting the seed in. Or a soldier, Tolstoy talks really well about in War and Peace, you know, the first time the soldier goes out, the naivety, and the second time, just the fear of going to war, just that crippling adrenaline and fear. But he, you know, he goes because at some point he must have a vision of victory. He must have a vision of something that is worth fighting for and dying for. And what writer here to John is saying is there is a vision that those who are suffering and in chapter 6 are crying out, how long will we not be vindicated? How long? Until we are vindicated, until our blood is avenged. And he kind of brings this touching, moving image of a vision of the end, which enables them to persevere. And God is, there's this real tension, isn't there? And Carla and I, we've been talking about this when we did Revelation and Biblios this week. People cry out for justice when they're violated, but when they're violators, they want mercy. And we find that we're actually all both. We need justice done on our behalf, but we also know we need mercy. We know that there are levels of violation that some of us have not perpetrated. I'm not saying that, and I'm not in any way denying or diminishing violations. What I am saying is when we're really, really, really honest, we know the state of our own human hearts. So God has this tension. He wants to bring justice, but he knows in doing that, there will be a lot of people who won't be able to receive mercy. And he is not willing that anyone should perish, but all come to a repentance, a change of mind. There are two wills of God. There's the sovereign will that will always be done. There will be an end. Justice will be done. And then there's the desire will of God. I desire that people follow me. I desire that people know me, but I can bring a horse to water, but I can't make them drink. It's the balls in humanity's court as to how we respond. And we've talked about that a lot. So he has this tension when people cry out for justice, that he has to withhold and withhold and withhold until he knows all the mercy needed to be poured out has fully met its number, and then he can act with wisdom at exactly the right time. And so why is it taking so long for people who cry out? And I think this chapter helps us see why the end seems so long in coming. So from the very beginning, God's plan was that every nation would be blessed. He says in Genesis 12, God promises Abraham all peoples, and that word was all distinct ethnic groups on earth will be blessed through Abraham, the man of faith. And we skip through to Jesus. He uses the same word in the Greek, in the Genesis, it's in the Hebrew, but this the same word in the Greek. But after his death and resurrection, he commands his disciples to go out and make disciples of all nations. That word in the Greek is ethne, so distinct ethnic groups. Make followers of Jesus in every nation of the world. And then he says, and then the end will come. We've looked at that before earlier in Matthew. The gospel will be preached to all the nations, and then the end will come. Paul reminds us in Galatians that all nations are blessed through Abraham, because those of faith are blessed along with Abraham, the man of faith. So through Jesus, the gospel goes out to all nations and everyone's blessed. And John picks up on this vision twice. We've seen it earlier in chapter 4, verse 9, and we see it again here in chapter 7, verse 9. After I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. The vision is, as I've given a picture there, the vision is the nations. The vision is the whole world. People responding to Jesus from every single distinct ethnic group in the whole world. That is his vision. And this company, finally in Revelation, right at the end, we'll come to it, is described as a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. So what is the vision? What is Jesus' vision that enabled him to have joy when looking at the cross? And it was the vision of a bride for him, handpicked from every tribe, language, people and nation. And he will not return or end suffering or vindicate his people until the full company of believers are in him. He will not violate or short circuit that vision. And what is our vision? What empowers us, especially in our sufferings, to persevere? It is this vision of him, of what he's like. This whole book, Revelation, is a revealing of who Jesus is and what he's like. And it empowers us to persevere. I don't know about you, but the more I taste or touch Jesus, the more just deep and rich and profound and beautiful he is. He's utterly pleasing and perfect in all his ways. He's deep and wise and extraordinary and light and healing and wholeness. And we can never penetrate the depths of who he is. And it's him that actually sustains us. It's him. As God says right at the end, my reward is with me, not even what I can give you, but me. I am the life. And so he is the vision. And we say that, we look back earlier, we fix our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. So when any of us are going through difficult circumstances or challenging circumstances, or maybe we have to take a step of faith and overcoming, the vision is him. He's the one that enables us to overcome and sustain and keep believing. Or even, you know, big conceptual issues of faith completely, that you know, we all have to meet the question of who was Jesus? Who is he? We have to grapple with the issue of his humanity and his divinity, that he lived, died, and no one's found his body in 2,000 years. And I personally believe he was materially raised from the dead, which is the game changer and does signify his full divinity. And so at every level, it's Jesus that is our vision, that helps us, sustains us, overcomes. So this book of Revelation reveals Jesus to enable us to persevere through every circumstance. And if we're going back to those seven habits of highly successful people, we overcome in the present because we have the end in mind. And I think it's really important for us all, in every situation, to know why we're doing what we're doing. I'm not necessarily saying we will, but say we're married, what is the end in mind? What are we seeing in 50 or 60 or 70 years' time? If we're parenting, what is the end? What is the 20-year game plan for producing mature adults? If we've got a work project, maybe a short-term one or a long-term one, what is the end that we're trying to achieve with that? And most of all, of course, what aspect of the kingdom are we called and are we building on earth as it is in heaven? And what does it look like? What do we physically want it to look like? Because I think that helps us and inspires us to navigate the present and brings clarity to it. Some of us may know immediately, I know exactly what I'm here for and what I'm doing. I know what I want this relationship to look like. I know what I want this. There's an aspect of brokenness in the world which I know that I've been called to bring some clarity and transformation to, and I can do that. And others of us sort of know that we want to live by that, but maybe haven't got some really sharp kind of vision on it. Or maybe we have, but we need to step up to have that sort of spiritual and mental fitness to live according to it, if that makes sense. I think wherever we are, we can have that revelation word. Without a vision, we perish. To receive that prophetic revelation, that blueprint from above, for the very minutiae of leaning into God for a conversation at a party. What's your blueprint now? What's your design now? To the much bigger, what's your blueprint for my whole life? We can lean in, we can hear his prophetic revelation and then fulfill it and live that happy, full of favour and abundant life that he promises. Yep, so this week we're learning to live with the end in mind.